This is RSVB Update, episode 640, recorded Thursday, October 5th, 2017, the Non-Clan Friendly Exchange. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSVB Update once again. The month of October has begun, and in addition to a new slate of RS updates and new RS discussion and potentially new decisions made by Jagex that you guys all want to hear our opinions about, we do have a new co-host this month. We said goodbye to Dave last week with The Lost Grove. Dave did great for RuneFest coverage and everything in September, but this month we have a new co-host for October. You guys have heard him a couple of times before. He's never actually had a permanent co-hosting position on the show here, so you're going to get to know him a little bit over the next 3 or 4 weeks. And this new co-host is Tycho Elf, or more affectionately known as Tycho from Clan Quest. Welcome.
Thank you, Shane.
It's so good to have
hello,
you here.
Everybody.
Just, you know, I think your second or third time on the show. So give everyone a little bit of a brief rundown about who you are and what your name means in RuneScape.
Yeah, so my name in-game is Tycho Elf, or as I like to call myself, Tycho, the Elven Elf born of the Elves. And as you mentioned, I've been here twice or even three times as a guest, and sent you a couple of questions now and then. And I classify myself as an adventurer in-game. I have the Master Quest cape, and I had the Completionist cape before 120 Slayer came out. And I stopped at 110 at the moment, and very slowly going towards 120, but that's not my main goal at the moment. And even though I'm part of Clan Quest, I actually don't specialize in lore or history, but I actually specialize in exploration and methods. This can be PVM and skilling and a lot of other things. It's just something I really love. So here I am to give you, Shane, the best possible view of today's of this week's update,
and of course give that also to the listeners. And you know, it's always interesting having new perspectives, so we'll see what we get this month. Hopefully you'll get a nice slate of updates to work with and discuss and sink your teeth into. I know we got at least one that is that's going to be something that hasn't been done before, but we'll get to that just a little bit later. So you ready to begin for this week's primary update?
Oh yes.
So this week is called Customer Support Week and Gilenorian Giving 2. Customer Support Week, of course, is the week every year where Jagex wants to highlight ways you can keep your account safe and ensure that you're not going to get hacked or get scammed, and basically just remind everyone that, you know, you put all the time and effort in the world to maintaining your RS account. You should probably secure it. So there's a number of festivities going on this week, including the drop, which you can take part in Lumbridge. It's got unique customer support based and account security questions. There's also free XP and clue scrolls that you can get from Count Check in Lumbridge, and also extra keys on Treasure Hunter, 2 extra daily keys for whenever you log in. So giving people a reason to log in and take part in that. The clue scrolls, you get 2 caskets for whichever clue scroll you complete, but you need to be able to be fully protected to unlock the second one. And of course, that means bank pin and the RuneScape Authenticator. I assume you use both the bank pin and Authenticator, right?
Oh, yes. I'm using them both, and I'm really happy about this. It happens once in a while, but giving out XP lamps, clue scroll, extra keys, everything, this is something I'm really happy about Jagex doing, rewarding players that protects what's theirs. But one thing I'm a little curious about is I never saw they mentioned some of the most common scams that you see in the Grand Exchange.
Oh, yeah.
For example, if you go there, you see a lot of bots that's saying, search this name on YouTube, and then the YouTube page will have a link to something that looks like the RuneScape homepage and that you need to log into, or the really classic doubling money or trimming armor
Yeah,
that's been ancient.
you got to be really careful with those. Another one to watch out for while we're on the topic of common scams is that if your email address is anywhere out there, in the RuneScape community, like they find it on a RuneScape fan site or something, you can definitely also get those kind of scams in email where they say, click here for a free account verification or click here to access the RuneScape mobile beta. Those are all, of course, fake. So, you don't want to click any of those. You just want to make sure those emails go to your spam box and are quarantined and deleted, properly. So, it's an effort that is ongoing because, the path the scammers take is always going to vary, and you can just have your secure RS password, but if you just enter that password on anything that looks like a RuneScape website, you're gonna get your account messed up. And that's actually a reason as to why the RuneScape Authenticator is such a good thing. Do you use the RuneScape Authenticator with a smartphone, or how do you use it?
Yeah, I use it with my Android. So whenever I log in, I just take it out of my pocket, enter the code, and whoops. And that's quite easy. I
Yeah.
mean, some people think that it's quite a hassle,
It's
but
not
there's
really.
always the option of trusting the computer for 30 days. And I'm like,
I do that.
yeah, every 30 days, you're like, oh, it's this time again, but it's not a hassle. I mean, it's just 12 times in a year. 12 times.
Yeah,
Plus the
exactly.
times when you're somewhere else. For example, when I was at RuneFest, I tried to log in from one of their computers and, whoa, their authenticator. So believe me, it makes your account secure.
Yeah, and if you don't have a smartphone, and you want to use Authenticator, you can still do that. There's a program out there called WinAuth. It works on Windows, and it basically lets you use the same protocol that you use for the Windows Authenticator. So you can just download WinAuth. It's an open source project, so it's been verified safe. You find it at winauth.com. So you download WinAuth and you just extract the zip file that has the WinAuth executable in it, and you just run WinAuth. And you say you're going to set up a new authentication token as a Google Authenticator. So in order to do this, you just go to your account center on the Jagex website and click Enable Now for the RuneScape Authenticator. And you'll be taken through the very simple three-step process to enable it. So just click Setup Now. And then in there, you have a choice of either scanning a code or there's a link that says Can't Scan This Code. So if you click Can't Scan This Code, you'll be given a special secret. So you then just copy and paste that secret and take it into WinAuth and add a new Google Authenticator, call it RuneScape, and then enter in the secret code. Then click Verify Authenticator, and you'll be given a six-digit unique key that you then re-enter on the RuneScape website. And then once you re-enter this code on the RuneScape website, Authenticator is now enabled for your account. And that's literally all there is to it. So you can do it mobile, or if you, for some reason, don't want to use your mobile phone and just want to have it on your computer, you can use this free application called WinAuth to accomplish this if you are running Windows. I'm not sure if there's any other options out there for the Mac, but I did have a look at this one for Windows because I think that's what the majority of you guys use out there is Windows. So WinAuth and RuneScape can definitely work together, and you can pair to create quite the secure RuneScape account, even if you don't have a mobile account. So you can take part in this Gilenorian Customer Support Week and Gilenorian Giving and get the double caskets for your Clue Scrolls, even if you don't have a mobile phone, which is something I think a lot of people are unaware of, is that, they say, I don't have a smartphone, so I can't run this Authenticator app. Well, it's not immediately apparent, but WinAuth allows you to do that, and there are other options out there to do this. So if you want to have Authenticator enabled and you play RuneScape on Windows, you can have it done for free. So that's at winauth.com. And if you're wanting to see a step-by-step version of this, just head on over to the YouTube version of the show at youtube.com/rsbnbstaff. We do have a quick little demo of how you can set up WinAuth for your RuneScape account. So that's something I always like to bring out at this time of year. So always nice to promote security like that. But Clue Scrolls, did you get anything good from the customer support Clue Scrolls?
Yeah, actually, because I did one today, and it ended just south of Lumbridge. You know, where you used to fish shrimps back right. in the days. How many years has it been since I fished there? Anyways, I fished there, and of course, a fisher comes up and wants to offer me a 99 account, more skills. And I'm like, if you look at my stats, I'm clearly above 99 in several of them. So this wasn't a smart fisher, and I'm just... told him to take a hike. So I got two caskets out of that. And the first one, I got two puzzle skipping knots. No, what did I say? Puzzle skipping tickets. And I know that a lot of people want to skip the puzzles because apparently those are worth over 300k each. So yeah. That's very nice. And the second one gave me a Bandos page 4.
Ooh.
That was worth just above 900k.
Yeah. And did you find you're able to sell them for that item, or has the Clue Scroll value gone down a bit this week? Because I found that they've gone down a bit this week.
Yeah, they have gone down. So they are currently on the Grand Exchange and waiting to be sold.
Yeah. And you know, rewards here scale with your total level. So if you have a higher total level, you'll get stronger rewards from them. Do we know if the Luck of the Dwarves ring impacts these Clue Scrolls?
I mean, that's quite an interesting question because I know they impact normal Clue Scrolls.
Yeah, and I forgot to wear mine when I was doing
it in your inventory. It doesn't say easy or elite. It says clues. It says CS weak. So it could be a unique fifth type of Clue Scroll that isn't affected by the ring. Now that you mention it, I have my Lock of the Dwarves on me at all times, just because the one small possibility of acquiring the Hasselmere Signet Ring, and it didn't shine even though I got unique rewards like the Bandos page 4 for the God Book. So I don't think it's actually affected, unless the message was bugged and didn't show up, then I don't think it's affected by that.
I don't know, but that's definitely something we'll have to look out for going forward. I'll give that a try when I have today's to see if I see them, because I just forgot to equip it. And you know, a good chance if you always have it on and didn't trigger that it doesn't work. Another thing with the drop is that if you play the drop and you win, you unlock the rare title of the Knowledgeable. So I'm not exactly sure how this works, because I did play the drop at the exact time, because those run at 0 minutes past the hour and 30 minutes past the hour. I won. I got through all the questions, but I didn't unlock the title. So I'm not sure how that works, if that was only for on stream or if it was any time this week. So I'm unsure about that.
Well, it says here on the page that tune in 16 or 4 p.m. on Monday the 2nd of October. And
yeah, that might have been the only one.
A new edition of the drop. So it could be that, or it could be that the title was available from last time, and thus you already have it.
Maybe, but I didn't see it in my list.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, that's just a minor niggle. Anything else with the clue scrolls before we move on to the Gilinorian giving part of the event? Because, you know, I think overall, this is just a nice little simple way of ensuring your account security is up to date and get some free clue scroll loot on the way. So,
well, I always have my wing on, no matter if it's affected or not. I'm going to have it on at all times when it comes to clue scrolls.
All right, so Gilinorian Giving. This is GIX's yearly charity event, and what they're doing with this is this time they're offering skilling tokens for charity that you can exchange for the Warden of the Mind Robe set. And you can also grab the Defender of the Mind outfit and capes from the previous Gilinorian Giving event using rune coins if you want to. And all proceeds are going to be divided equally between CPSL Mind, the Prince's Trust, and YMCA. So this is the same charitable partners that Jagex partnered with last year. Did you go have a look at the Gilinorian Giving NPCs south of Varrock?
Yes, and the first thing I noticed was, wow, they're really out in the middle of nowhere.
And right.
That surprised me, like, in the middle out of nowhere, they are literally between Getrud's house, where you get your cat, and the Champions Guild. And I'm like, nobody even takes this route as a shortcut.
I think they were north of the Lumbridge Crater last year, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they were. So, but that still surprised me. And even though they have all these small signs all over Gelenor that can teleport you straight to them, it feels a little bit like it's still in the middle of nowhere, because if it's something so important as donating and making people aware of your mental health, then I think it should be a little bit more central than just putting up small signs everywhere in Gelenor and hoping that people will click on them and then click teleport and then talk to the NPCs. And I have a suggestion for that, but we'll come to that later.
All right. So the YMCA is focused on supporting young people to feel safe and happy. And what they do with this is they focus around mental health. And this is, of course, why Jagex has teamed up with them. Everything we're seeing here is a mental health awareness. And basically, the sense I got from this is that the YMCA is the most general here, generalist charity here, and they're just out here sharing knowledge about mental health and mental health awareness with Jagex. The next we have is the Prince's Trust, and what the Prince's Trust is for is once again focused on mental health, but what they're also doing with this is that they are working to improve young people's mental health to help them into work, because they feel obviously that a job is one of the best things that can happen for someone who is struggling with mental health. And obviously, if they can get them past or improve their mental health, they're going to be able to be more effective and be able to get the jobs that they want. And one really interesting thing with all this here is that you can talk to any of these and they give you a way to talk about your own mental health and see how can this charity help me if I did actually need that. But the next is CPSL Mind, and basically what they want to do with this one is raise awareness of mental health issues and have more people talk about these mental health issues and ensure that people are aware of their Stop Suicide campaign. And that is what CPSL Mind is working on this year. So as you can see here, overall, you know, three very good charities for mental health awareness. And it's always nice when Jagex does a charitable event like this. So all in all, I think grade A update for Jagex, but we'll talk a bit more about the actual charitable event later. I believe we have a question on that. Anything else on the Gilinorian Giving NPCs?
Well, not the NPCs, but I actually saw that these three this the partners of Jagex actually were at RuneFest this year, and they were just beside the RS on mobile on the second floor on the Battlesea Evolution. And it was a bit sad that there were so many on playing the on the mobiles and basically nobody talking with them. So it was a bit sad, but one question that now comes up to mind is if the people that were there, if that's their NPCs that's in the game, because we know that Andrew, Paul, and Ian Gower have been made to NPCs
right
in the Gower quest. So that could be a possibility.
Yeah. Let's see. They're named Cat. YMCA representative is named Cat. The one for CPSL Trust is named, let's see, what's his name if we get through this next chat here. Sorry, her name is Laura. So Cat, Laura, and let's see who we got for the Princess Trust here. Zoed. That might be that. I don't know if those sound Gielinorian or if they sound real world names, but interesting observation there, Tycho.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see. What have we got next here on the docket? Moving on past that, Jagex did update the Grand Exchange regarding the poll that they took back in February, reducing the number of booths in the Varrock Grand Exchange from 4 to 1. Boy, that'd be interesting if there was a Grand Exchange in Falador, wouldn't it?
Sorry, I didn't hear the last thing.
I said that would be interesting if there was a Grand Exchange in Falador, wasn't it? Because I said, they updated the Falador Grand Exchange.
Placed
but of course,
in the middle
Varrock
of Falador Castle, the White Knights are suddenly becoming the number one ruling economy.
So I voted no for this. I wanted to keep them to the original four booths, but, you know, reasons for that is just because it's always been that way. And I mean, sure, it's a little bit sparse, but still you even have this huge sparse area around the edge there, and the fountain in the middle has also disappeared. But nonetheless, I think we do have a pretty good graphical example here of what Jagex is capable of when you look at this new central Grand Exchange. There's so much detail down from all the clocks and all of the items on shelves, the party hats, the potions, the scrolls. It's very nice. What do you think of what we got here for the Grand Exchange rework?
So since I got the Lock of the Dwarves, I teleported straight to the Varrock Grand Exchange, and the first thing I noticed is, wow, it's so empty here, the open space and everything.
Right.
And that when I get closer, it's just as you say, that Jagex can show the amount of graphical beauty they can create. It was a really good work, but I feel that open space, though, it gets me a little, even though they said they did it for the poll because they had a poll about it, and I remember voting for it, like, no, please keep it at 4, but the majority said yes, and now it's just like in old school. It's one
I did not know that.
In the middle. And I actually have quite a long list here in front of me of things I want to mention, because if I ask you this, Shane, why would you prefer the Varrock Grand Exchange more than the one in Prifdinas or Menafos?
I would say the reason I would go to the Varrock Grand Exchange first is because it's easily accessible via Fairy Ring. It's also easily accessible via Spirit Tree.
Yeah, that's true.
Is that the reasons you were thinking as well?
Well, there's the Prifdinas Lodestone, which makes it the fastest way to access it. Because if we are honest, before the Invention Batch 2 came out with Spirit Root and the portable fairy wings that could take you straight to Sonoris or to the Gnome Stronghold, it wasn't that easy to get to the Varrock Grand Exchange. I mean, you could teleport to Edgeville and then run eastwards and then through the shortcut to the northwest side of the Grand Exchange. Now you have to run all the way to the middle also. But I'm thinking about it, and I still think the Varrok Grand Exchange should be the main exchange. And then I was throwing about with the idea, okay, but what could we do to make it the one and main exchange? Because it got this huge space now, and what can we do with it? And you know what I thought of?
What's that?
There are two things you can trade. What the first thing is items, and the second thing is information. So what you could do is that you add NPCs there that already exist in game to the Grand Exchange and make it not only a trade for items but for information. If we already look at it, there are already NPCs that tell you the prices of herbs, logs, runes, combat items,
Which are
and
kind of
all kinds of
useless when you
stuff.
think about it.
So that's one thing, but I think they should take it a bit further, like circus barkers that tells you where the current location is, and the trial announcers, and a teleport to the Gelenorian giving. And you know what I noticed when
So
thinking about that?
basically, it sounds like what you're suggesting is they should add some more amenities, kind of like what we have at the Prif GE, right?
Well, yes. Well, yes, and I actually noticed that the trial announcer and the circus barker are just on the south entrance of the Grand Exchange, and I'm like, what are they doing out there? There's nobody standing at the entrance of a Grand Exchange. They're all in it, so they should move that to the middle. And when thinking about it, well, what more kind of information do people want, and what have people lost with the one unified Grand Exchange? And I can tell you one thing, that there are actually some things that are banned in the Varrok Grand Exchange, and that is summoning familiars and placing vexillums, clan vexillums.
Oh, now that's
So
interesting.
I did an experiment. So normally you can only place the vexillum on the grass path that's on the very edges, and that was okay when you had four booths in the corners. But now that you have the booth in the middle, guess how far it was. I mean, I tried to get as closest as I could. Guess how far it was between the booth and my Vex.
20 steps.
Actually, it's not that far, but it was still 11 steps. So you can stand at the booth and do a surge and then take another step before you can reach my Vex. And that's as close as I could get. And that's a little bit sad for those who wants to do clan recruitment. So I actually should suggest that they should put Vexillum stands around the central booth so clans can put their Vexes there. Have you seen the clan Vex holders in Birth Hope?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just what it does, but nobody is standing there and waiting for somebody to put a clan Vex there, because I mean, even if you're in World 2, the Birth Hope, that is a skilling world, it's still too far off, and people much rather put them directly or next to the bank instead of going over there and putting them in the Vexillum stands, even though the Vexillum stands actually have one nice feature, and that is if you put a Vex there or several, then the big flag that normally only says RS will actually change to the clan flag.
Oh, so basically what you're thinking is that we could have an owned a clan quest owned Grand Exchange if we all started using the World 66 GE and they had a feature like this.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually quite an idea. I mean, imagine putting that flag on top of the current Grand Exchange,
That
I
would
mean, the one
definitely give people
booth,
a reason
and
to
then
use the
it
Varrok Grand
cycles through the
Exchange.
Vexillums.
Yeah. And
Yeah,
then
so that's one thing about exchanging, not only exchanging items, but also information. Because
so maybe what
Varrok.
it should also do is it should become the clan recruitment hub.
So I think that actually by making it one booth, it become a little bit less social for the clans, and I still feel this empty area, even though I went to World 2 and checked out, okay, how do people react to this? And another thing I want to mention is that the reach for the grand, if you want to trade something or bank, is actually short. You have to stand just next to the booth. You can't stand two
It's
or
not like the
three
perf one
spaces away,
where you
and
can be a
that's
little
a
bit
bit
further away.
sad. So there are actually three groups that I see there. Number one are those banking, and those are just packed in just next to the booth. The second group are those who are casual, who are just standing a couple of squares away, just looking at each other, maybe placing a dummy down. And then the third group are the rich people who's still standing in the southwest corner with their party hats, and they were singing and talking about rich people's problems.
Rich people's problems. I think if it came down to it and they redid the Grand Exchange to be exactly like you outlined here, I could definitely get behind that. So I like your ideas on this. I'm gonna make a note
So
about this plan
to
index.
make it just a rundown, I would to really make it sociable, I would like to see a couple of Vexillum holders, maybe a couple of other merchants than the one we currently have, and then we can have combat dummies like the ones we have in Lumbridge Combat Academy. We can have a challenge mistress, maybe. Maybe that's too far-fetched. But we could
Maybe.
also have the NPC skill tutors, god and missionaries, maybe a gnome ball, the Faruk game items, or introduction to other mini games, or the mini game spotlight, or somebody dealing out newcomer maps. We can even put the event notice boards for clans there, or even lore NPCs, and so much more. I mean, anything that doesn't involve skilling, like anvils or any portable extenders or anything, but that's just pure information, and people come because they know that the latest news is there at the Varrock GE.
All right, so there is one other little thing this week that is a bit of a area of contention here. They're calling it Lootscapes, and this is an effort by Jagex to get more people to watch the live streams. And what you can do is for the month of October, you're going to get a brand new item if you watch any of the live streams in October. For October, you'll get the Twitching Orb Pet. So basically, if you watch any of the live streams in October, you'll be given a code after you connect your RuneScape account to your Twitch account and tune into the Tuesday live stream. And then you'll be able to get this new pet in RuneScape. So, what do you think of this? Giving pets out and items out to watch streams on Twitch?
I was a little skeptical because the first thing I thought was, oh, come on, there will always be this one guy who's kind enough to write down the code or anything and just give it to the rest of the world. But when looking more into it, it seems that they cover that by making it more personal, like personal code. And I actually saw the twitching orb, and the funny thing about it is when you examine it's just like a boss kill counter that this person has watched this number of live streams. So
And it's
that's
not it's
actually quite funny.
yeah it's not actually a code, it's actually a link, so you have to link your RuneScape account and Twitch account so it knows when you're watching.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what they meant with when they commented that you only need to watch 1 minute of it. And so yeah, there's that. But the thing about live streams is that information is power. The That's why they always run the joke panic sell of wands when they are watching the live streams, because when they announced that fletching was going to be put free to play, well, guess what the very first thing they did?
Panic sell wands.
Well, almost. They actually started panic buying logs because they knew as
But
soon as
hey,
that hits free to play, then it's selling everything and catching.
that's excellent for woodcutters, though.
Yeah.
My issue with this is that the live streams, I don't know if this works if you watch it VOD or if it needs to be live, because they say you'll be able to claim it on any of our Tuesday or Friday live streams throughout October. But the thing is, the Tuesday and Friday live streams take place at 1600 UTC game time, which isn't accessible for most people on the other side of the world. So there's that issue. And I mean, it just doesn't seem fair to gate that kind of content behind a live stream that's going to be held on those days at JAGX time. So,
That's a very good point.
yeah. I mean, if they were VOD, if you could watch the VOD, I think we would have no problem.
Yeah.
If you if you could watch the Sunday live stream, which happens at 1900 UTC, that might be a bit better. But ultimately, when it comes down to it, I think that's a big issue with this. And the other issue, I don't know anyone who keeps count of how many live streams they watch as as if it were a badge of honor. I don't know anyone who does that. So in that regard, it just kind of sees as to me as a way that JAGX is trying to raise the number of people who are watching the live streams, if that is going to be their main source of information dispersal. And if that is going to be their main source of information dispersal, then that's another issue entirely that we can talk about with some things that could be changed about the live streams and whatnot. But I think when it comes down to it, it needs to be for any live stream, and it also needs to be for the VODs, and that'll fix the issue. And if they are wanting this to be the primary source of information dispersal for RuneScape and RuneScape behind the scenes info, they need to start publishing their own show notes from these live streams and stop instead relying on, various community members at sites that shall not be named to provide rundowns of what happened in the live streams. Because as much as the people there want to be accurate, there have been some times I've noticed different contexts and different, let's just say, inflections on wording that have changed the meaning of what was said on the live stream compared to what was posted there. So I think those are two things that definitely could be improved for this going forward. So, I don't
Yeah,
know.
I was just about to mention that it's important that the players get the message directly from Jagex and
Exactly.
not through other parties, because
Exactly.
even though I'm very thankful for all these people putting time and effort on watching everything they are saying and then making it into a summary that people can read later and get the news, it's still not as accurate as if they are sitting there and listening it for themselves. But people see it in different angles, and that's why it's so important that they get it firsthand.
Exactly. And, a prime example here is with this podcast in our show notes. We got our full show notes at update.rsbb.com. And when the show goes out, we publish the actual Google Doc that we have used to build the show. So everything we have here is made public. And Tycho, you can attest to this now. Whenever we're producing the show, we start the day after the show is released, we start off with a huge spreadsheet. We d started doing the spreadsheet mechanic this year because I wanted help, and previously it was just me doing this. So I moved it to a spreadsheet where we have a collection of people, our producers of RSBnB Update and hosts, who can just submit information for the show. And we start off the day after the show comes out, and if there's anything pertinent worth talking to, it comes up and gets put in the show notes in this. In the spreadsheet. And then when it's showtime, we copy and paste the stuff we want to talk about from the spreadsheet into an actual Google Doc. We use that during the show, like we're doing right now. then after the show that gets published. And, you know, I think that would be a good model for JX, would be for them to publish some kind of show notes somewhere of the live streams, including questions asked and the actual links in the Twitch stream or even the YouTube version of it to the answer. Because one of the most powerful things that I've started doing with this podcast since putting it on YouTube about a year and a half ago is that you can now link to any time index on social media or anywhere. So if Jagex is having a Q&A and they have a specific question that was asked, they can type up the question and then put a direct link to that question if people want to hear it. And that's, you know, that's just good information management in the modern world on the internet, in my opinion. So there's a good model for it.
Yeah, that's something they should look into, but they're actually not quite far away from all of this. I mean, it's just a couple of changes to make it fair for every time zone, to make it fair for everybody and get their message out to the people. I mean, they're already doing it, so everybody who thankfully watches the streams and then put out the information, but getting their message out, getting their view out, this is what we want to do, and this is how we are going to do it.
Indeed. You ready for some patch notes this week?
Oh, yes.
Okie dokie. So, item rewards that are unique to treasure trails are now tracked, similar to the boss collection log. This log will be viewable in-game via a new book object when the clue scroll rework update goes live. So that's kind of interesting that we got this week, the same week as the customer support clue scrolls. I guess maybe just a way to give people a head start on getting some clue scroll items if they don't normally do clues, perhaps?
Yeah, it's that. And also, you know how people reacted when the boss collection log came out?
Yeah, the boss drop logger.
Yeah, boss drop logger. They actually said, oh, why didn't we have this before? Because all those PVMers who been put hours and hours into killing one boss after another and have over 3k kill count, and then suddenly this comes out and it shows like, nope, you haven't acquired this and this and this, and they know they have acquired it at least 5 times.
Yeah.
So getting this out very early before the real update is a huge thumbs up.
Yeah, because I'm a little bit disappointed, but we'll talk about that later.
They should have done that 5 years ago.
Oh, 10 years ago. Good 10 years ago. Actually, no. 12 years ago. Pardon me.
12 years ago.
Yeah, but I understand why they can't. So.
Oh, 12 years ago. That's older than me.
Oh, wow.
I
could go back even further than that.
Oh dear, I'm going to grow a beard while hearing Shane, his whole life story about this.
Oh, June 2004, I got RuneScape members and the rest is history. Fun fact, I was only a normal RuneScape player for about 2 months before the fan site started.
So. 2 months.
Yeah, okay. It was only a normal for 2 months.
Remember when you planted your first herb?
Oh, of course I do. The day farming came out, that's ingrained in my memory.
Oh, of course it is. Why am I asking?
Alrighty, I also remember my first magic tree run as well.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways, that's beside the point.
Folks, this is going to be a 3-4 hour long episode today.
Crafting combination runes will now fill urns and give a chance to receive rune ethereal fragments. All right, that's interesting that combo runes weren't initially included, but that makes sense since combo runes are very popular in this day and age.
Oh, yes, especially since they put the Shattered Worlds just next to the Water Altar.
Yeah, you know, they nerfed that banking spot for the Water Altar a little bit, but it's still pretty good because you can... What other rune altar can you see a bank from, right? So...
Yeah, I actually tried that, and I noticed that they put the swamp around the altar, so you have to run around it.
Yeah,
so, that's a good nerf.
It's also no longer possible to protect poison ivy bushes planted in Priftinus because they cannot be diseased. Yeah, that was back in the original Prift design document, so good to know. Kopesh Blessings, which is, of course, for the Magister, are now made in order automatically, and that order is Sand, Sea, and then Sky. If you have multiple versions of one blessing, then the others will be prioritized until you have an equal amount of each. Did you fight the Magister when it came out?
No, because I didn't have the Slayer level.
Oh,
so
right.
I actually had to
require that
work
insane
a bit toward
Slayer
it.
Level.
The Magister requires 115 Slayer.
Yes.
And of course, they had to put the lore it drops as a Master Quest Cape requirement. And if you know me, nothing comes between me and the Master Quest Cape. So I started leveling up Slayer like crazy, and I got one lore from the Soul Devourers, but no, I got up to 110, and then I used Wild Pies to fight the Magister and then get the rest of the lore. And I was actually quite close in using my insta-kill darts from Balthasar's Raffle, but people then told me, no, don't do that. It's just like Queen Black Dragon. It's a DPS fight. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to save it, and I'm glad I did.
Yeah, I haven't gone there yet, and I'm still only 97 Slayer, so it'll be a long time before I attempt that.
That's why you have me, Shane.
Exactly, that's why I have all the great people on this podcast to do the high-level combat content. The Magister can now phase while stunned. I'm not sure exactly what that means, mechanic-wise.
Okay, I can explain that.
Sure.
During the fight, there are several phases that happens as the Magister gets lower and lower on hit points. And during the fight, the Magister will summon one obelisk after another. And from the sound of this, if the Magister was stunned, he wouldn't phase, resulting in a delay in the summoning of the obelisks. It actually sounds like it would be a good thing for the player, because if the obelisks aren't summoned, then the player won't get debuffed. So, yeah, this is a patch.
So it helps the player then.
No, this patch actually doesn't help the player.
Oh, okay. I guess I got
actually,
it.
Actually, I don't think it does.
Anyways, we have some clan patch notes as well. New clan notice board entries have been added for the four Menaphos districts, the Sophonim Slayer dungeon under places, and the Shifting Tombs under activities. They have also added Daemonheim, Tyrannan, and Wilderness options to the notice board subtype dropdown for tasks.
Okay, can I give my opinion on
please
this?
Please
do. I'm actually disappointed with this, and do you know why?
Why?
Because if you look at the... if you're going to make a clan event, then you first put in a date and time, and then you come to activities and places. And it's actually quite... It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare when you're going to decide a place, because the list is humongous.
Yep.
It's the longest list in the world of places. I mean, they have all the names of the bars in Gelinor, and only that, and all the place, all the cities, and then all the Slayer areas, and even more. And everything is basically handwritten. And I'm asking myself, why don't they just drop everything and give us the option to type it in ourselves? Why can't we have that? Because there are still things that is missing from there that I even sent bug reports on, but that doesn't get added. And every time new content comes, like the Grove, it has to be added there as well.
Definitely.
So I can't now go and tell the clan through the clan notice board that, you know, we're going to have a clan event at the Grove. I can't. So that's
I think it speaks to the putting energy into this.
Just give us the option to enter the location ourselves and even the activities that will make such a huge contribution towards clans.
Yeah, and I mean, this has to be a design decision from when they first made this system, because it's going to be a lot easier internally to hold a set list of places and, you know, activities rather than just storing whatever a user enters, because that takes space and that also requires, you know, input to be checked for profanity and whatnot, and they would have to apply the filter to it, and they probably just felt that it was easier to do this. And, you know, when the clan system came out, that might have worked, but like you say now, it's just a unmanageable list. So
I actually thought about that profanity, but you know what I then thought of?
What
if somebody in the clan who's hosting events is writing profanity? Why is he still in the clan?
Very good question. Very good question. Anyway,
so let the clans handle it.
Yeah, I agree. Using a prawn or golden cracker on another player will now open all crackers in a player's inventory. Okay, good to know. The canoe interface has been updated to be more consistent with other menus within the game, which, you know, makes sense because the canoe is very, very old. Ganodermic creatures now display their weakness on the Slayer counter. They didn't before. And here's a big one this week. Lodestones can now be dragged onto the action bar and activated as a quick teleport.
Oh, Runecrafters are going to be very happy about this.
Definitely. And so will my Circus Trapeze Act. There's a little glitch when this came out. This patch note made it so that this was the only way to activate lodestones. If you opened up the lodestone interface after the patch came out, it wouldn't work. You would have to drag the teleport to your action bar and press it there in order to actually use the lodestone teleport. So that was broken for a little while after the update. And, you know, it took a while to figure out that if you drag it to the patch note or to the action bar, you'll end up actually teleporting. And oh boy, that was certainly interesting to see everyone trying to get around without their lodestones, right?
Oh yeah, getting back to old school.
Yeah, like what's the quickest way to priff if you have no lodestone?
I mean, the number one teleport that I actually use to priff instead of the lodestone system is the clan vex, because it teleports you to any portal that takes you to the clan citadel.
Oh.
And if you have unlocked priff dinners, it actually takes you beside the lodestone, just beside the Diamond Helm and the ports portal, and it's much faster, and it doesn't require a quick teleport charge. So there's always something I have in my inventory, and that is just a very quick way to get to priff dinners.
All right. My first method after this broke was to cabbage port and then use the spirit tree.
Oh.
Yeah.
Now that works. Or the quiver.
Yeah, the quiver. I should do that task set.
Okay.
Anyways, there's the patch notes for the week. You ready to move on to something that Mod Timbo has given us?
Oh, Mod Timbo. Oh, I met him at Runefest.
Yeah, there was quite the photo of you two on social media that day.
Mod Timbo and Hasselmere. Oh, I love that beard. But it really felt when I had to rip it off. Like, it was glued to my face, actually. I never thought it was be so painful.
Well, you got to have pain if you want to look good, right? So, they have revealed, Montimbo has revealed drop rates for Nex, Angel of Death, and Telos. So this is part of an ongoing transparency project that Mod Timbo has regarding drop rates. So here we are. Nex, Angel of Death. Chance was 7 people. So the chance will decrease massively if there are more than the intended group size in the fight, they say. So if you have 7 people in your Nex, Angel of Death group, you're going to have a 1 in 1,000 chance for a unique item like Wand of the Praesol or Imperium Core. A 1 in a 250 chance for the Praesol Codex, only if you failed the unique roll, and a 1 in 5,000 chance for an intricate chest. So, as you can see here, 1 out of 250 chance to get the lore book. The Praesol Codex. Or the Praesol Codex is the lore book, right?
No. Oh, no. What am I saying? No. The law book is guaranteed if you are within those seven people, but the appraisal codex is the
Oh,
one
that's for
that
the
unlocks the 99 player courses. The one that was quite a discussion about if they were worth it or not. But there was like, what was the last time there were? 700 million, I think they were.
Yeah, around there, according to the GE. You know, that's not too bad for a 1 out of 250 drop chance.
No, that's actually not. So that certainly brings dinner to the table for every PVM group. And this makes me quite happy about Modtimbo releasing this. Releasing this because PVMers, well, of course, no surprise, they want their drops. So here we see an example of seven people and with eight plus people that we will come to in a moment. And of course, they want efficiency because, as we talked short about before, when the boss drop collection came out, everybody said, why didn't we have this before? So
yeah.
This is the same thing. By revealing this data, everybody can either go the safe route of 8 plus people or go with the rewarding route with 7 people. And I've been doing it quite a number of times, and 7 people, that's basically if one fails, then you're going to have a very rough time.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, the only drop rate that changes if you have more than 7 people is the chance for a unique item like the Wand Appraisal or Imperium Core. That goes up to 1 in 5,000, which is the same as the Intricate Chest. Also, the Appraisal Codex remains at 1 out of 250. And what's interesting to note, and we already knew this, but I'll just say it again, is that only the top 7 in the group are eligible for unique loot. So,
yes, there will be a lower chance, but they will still have the chance to get a wand. The one thing that brings dinner on the table, or as I like to call it, lobster on a silver platter.
Yeah, or even the codex would be good, and that's only 1 in 250. So that's actually not too bad, I think.
No, it isn't. But at the same time, it isn't a boss that you can just kill over and over again like Grodor when a god was dungeon boss.
Yeah.
This is our group effort.
Let's see. So 1 out of 250 is roughly 4% chance. Or sorry, not 4% chance. 0.4% chance of getting the drop. So what this means, then, if we do some quick math here, so go, how did I do that? What was I doing? So
you were counting on how many kills
right.
we need to do
so,
to get one codex.
So if you wanted one codex, you would have a 30% chance of getting it after 300 kills.
Okay.
After 500 kills, or sorry, you would have a 30% chance of not getting it after 300 kills. You would have a 13% chance of not getting it after 500 kills. So as you can see here, if you want a, let's see. Yeah, if you want about a 50-50 chance of getting it, you need to kill next AOD around 170 times.
Then I should consider myself very lucky because my team have gotten two codex and one wand, and I've like done 56 kills.
Yeah, that's pretty good then. So you said 56 kills?
Yes.
So you had a 79% chance of not getting it.
Oh, well, it was my team, so I actually haven't got a rare drop personally, but with my team, if one gets the drop, we are sharing it equally.
Of course. And, you know, this is assuming fair randomness and, you know, it could be different, but that's just a general way of doing a binomial distribution on that. So,
yeah.
All right, so moving on to Telos, when you loot Telos, your current streak and enrage that you fought Telos at has an impact on your chance of looting items, and the higher your streak or the higher your enrage, you have a greater chance of getting a unique item. However, at under 100 enrage, you have a 1 out of 10 worst chance for unique items, and under 25 enrage, that chance is further reduced by 1/3. Not only that, but the higher in rage and or streak you are, the greater chance at better regular loot you have too. So the higher you are, the greater chance of items like Onyx Bolt Tips, Uncut Onyx, and Crystal Keys. So, going with that said, if you had streak 1 and 100 in rage, you would have a 1 out of 263 chance for a unique drop. Streak 1 and 500 in rage, you had a 1 out of 72 chance in a unique drop. A streak 5 with 200 in rage takes you to a 1 out of 133 chance for a unique drop. And streak 1 with rage 999, 1 out of 38 chance of a unique drop. And if you take it all the way up to streak 1 and in rage 1024, you have a 1 out of 37 chance for a unique drop. So you can see as those in rage levels increase, you are going to have a huge chance at a unique drop. I've never fought Telos, have you?
Yes, I remember the day of the release. I think I died over 50 times in practice mode. And this was before I entered the era of what I call my bossing, the chapter of Tycho bossing. Because I'm mainly an adventurer and explore everything, but... So, bossing isn't really my main thing, but I've been trying Telos, and I actually haven't gotten up to 100 enrage. So, I can't say it's one boss that I'm very experienced with.
Okay. So, if you do roll a unique drop, that further breaks down into chances for other drops that are on this unique table. So... if you get a unique drop, you have a 75 out of 115 chance for an Anima Orb, a 10 out of 115 chance for the Dormant Saren Godbow, 10 out of 115 also for the Dormant Staff of Sliskay, and 10 out of 115 for the Dormant Zaros Godsword, and also 10 out of 115 for the Reprisal Ability Codex. So there's our drops for Telos. I don't know if this is going to make people more likely to fight or less likely to fight. What do you think?
I don't think it will make them fight more, but I think that the ones who are currently fighting will change their tactic because this is the answer they have been looking for. I mean, there are always people saying that it's better with us. Very long streak, and others saying no, it's the enrage, and here's the answer they all been waiting for.
It's the enrage.
So now they have they can actually choose. Some people will go with longer streaks, and some will go with higher enrage. And here we see that with the longer streaks, it will actually give a higher chance of a unique drop.
Yeah, and Timbo also says that, quote, due to the sensitive nature and volatility of Telos' drops, we won't be revealing the full formula in which Telos determines their unique drops, but instead give a few examples to demonstrate how it works.
Okay.
So, there we go. And also on this, just a bit of an addendum, Mod Timbo has said that if people want detailed drops of lesser items on these drops that are going to be done, they will be provided. So a question out there to everyone is, do you want the detailed drops of secondaries on things like AOD, Telos, and any of the other creatures that Mod Timbo will be covering? If you do, tweet at JagexTimbo and he will hear you and see what needs to be said about this. He's very open to hearing what the community says on matters like this. So,
don't be shy. Make your voice heard.
Yeah, exactly. They've also got a page here where you can go to runescape.com/droprates and you can see exactly what was posted in this forum post here. So they will be publishing this on the RuneScape website. So that is once again some good information. So, all right, you ready to look ahead at what's coming this month in October?
Oh, the month ahead.
Yeah. So, month ahead, the biggest update I'm seeing here is Dimension of the Damned. And that's the sense I get from Jagex as well, right? They really want to.
Oh, yeah. I remember sitting there at RuneFest and they were showing this video that.
It looks nothing like RuneScape, and that's interesting, I think. So we know Dimension of the Damned is arriving on October 16th, and it's focused around the Falador area. And the way it's going to work is you're going to get a new, brand new max account, and combat, crafting, and cooperation, they say, are the focus in this 2-week zombie fest. You know, we were initially thinking, oh, it might be PvP, but the information we got from this behind the scenes is that it is completely PvM. Which cooperation, and I think that's what everyone wanted to see from RS, is more cooperative game types that aren't necessarily bossing. So some things that you'll be able to do here is, you know, just the usual, you know, cooking, building, and preparing, let's just say. So kind of as you would in any other survival game. So you can protect your group by constructing barricades or use them to upset the competition in the area. Each player earns points by killing a wide variety of zombie types, including 10 player boss encounters, which then can be spent on Falador loot boxes. Unique equipment, power-up, and useful materials will also be found, which help you rack up more points and hopefully earn yourself an invitation to the unique endgame. So, basically what happens here is you use the 2-week period to build up points, and then if you get enough points, you'll be invited to the grand finale. And this takes place on October 28th, and each invited player will start fresh with 0 points, but this time death is permanent. So if you die in the finale on October 28th, you're dead. You won't be coming back. And throughout this 2-hour event, the world will slowly shrink in size with more and more monsters spawning until finally only one player remains. So this is, you know, this feels kind of a bit like old school RS Deadman, except focused on a PVM component and with a bit of a Halloween tinge to it.
Oh, yeah, I actually loved it. I mean, I was sitting there at RuneFest listening to this, and I actually loved this announcement. Not only that everybody can participate on equal terms, but it sounds like it's something you can gather your friends to, and come on, let's do a round of Dimension of the Damned, and then see how far you can go. I mean, like a fun thing if you are not aiming to gather points and be invited to the end game.
Right. And I mean, that's definitely something I think that RS hasn't seen before. And if it's very successful, it could perhaps set a new tone for various, I don't want to say RuneScape expansions because we've been there, but experiments with RuneScape. Kind of like Darkscape did.
And it's also a bit about the player skill instead of the skills you have been training on.
Right, because you have the max account.
So that's an interesting thing. And another thing that came to question about the end game is about time zones.
Very good point.
Yeah, because if everybody is going to be at a certain time on, what date did you say?
28th of October.
Yeah, 28th. If it's during a specific time, if everybody needs to be logged in at the exact same time, because that would be a real problem if you are a real pro that's gotten all those points and then
I live in New Zealand.
It's
at
4 a.m.
So I totally get what you're saying here. So.
Yeah, actually, I want to tell a small story here that. There is another reason why I was excited when I saw this. And you know what it was?
Why?
Because I've been playing around in my head with the idea of having a player-owned house zombie invasion.
Ooh.
And that is an idea I've been having in my head for at least 2 years and like playing around with it. So when Dimension of the Damned came out, I was like, oh, it's just like the idea I had, but in Falador instead. But how it would work in a player own house is that the resources you have in your house is literally what you have access to. You have a ladder, you can get beer, you can have your servant cook curry for you, or depending what it does. You have your armor wardrobe with everything you need, and you have dark lights in your questing room and everything. I mean, imagine that.
Yeah, that just shows the promise of construction. If it received an update, I was looking for a good word to use there. So,
Yeah,
yeah,
but
like
it was
it's going to
just an
open so
idea
many
I had.
this is going to open so many doors going forward, and it's really a great thing, I think. So, fingers crossed that it's successful.
Yeah,
Also,
so
this
if they
month,
cover the time zones, I'm quite happy about this.
yeah. Yeah, we'll have to see how that works because I know that'll be really hard for people in Australia and whatnot. So,
Yeah.
okay. So, focusing in on this, they're adding new free-to-play content this month, including the Fletching Skill, 2 D&D, 7 quests, the Warriors Guild, craftable offhands, crossbows, and more places to explore. So basically, they're referring to the areas to the east of Varrok, but not the dig site quest. And this is of course in anticipation for RS Mobile. And I think it's good that we're getting back to this because if you think about RuneScape is at its core a free-to-play game, and it's kind of felt like we've kind of shifted away from that in the recent years with members' content appearing in the free-to-play zones and whatnot. So I'm very happy to see this. So
Yeah, I'm also very happy because these last years, I feel that everything is going towards members. So this is certainly a step in the right direction that the free to play is also not only how do I say that? That if you play free to play, you're still playing RuneScape.
yep.
That
It
it's not
shouldn't feel
us.
like it's paywalled.
Yeah, exactly. The paywall, like the free to play, isn't supposed to be an entirely other game than pay to play. So this makes me so happy that they are doing this. And 7 quests, whoo,
Yeah,
that's a
lots of people
lot
are
of
gonna have fun.
content.
All right, Halloween Ghost Stories. This Halloween update is going to be focusing on storytelling, so it's kind of an update of old. They say, quote, "You'll uncover sad tales from tormented ghosts around the world and solve some putrid puzzles to help put them to rest." Half the stories from this mini quest have been taken directly from player submissions, and the other half have been written by RuneScape's J-Mods. And this is going to be available in part to free-to-play players as well as members. Rewards include a new Halloween emote, title, and a great cosmetic outfit that allows you to become a headless rider. That should be really
Okay.
fun.
That's interesting. Actually, one thing, have you read the lore books at the Manafos Library, the ones that were submitted by players?
Most of them.
Okay, can you give your thought about that?
I think I have mixed feelings about them. I think some of them are a little bit different in that, you think, oh, this is written by a player. Would Jagex write this? But on the other hand, some of them fit in quite nicely. So I think it's a I think it's a delicate balance if you want player submitted lore, if you want Jagex submitted lore.
Yeah, because this is the path they are taking. They are taking player submissions and Jagex lore and putting it
Yeah.
together for this Halloween update.
I think it's fine as long as we're not doing this for major quests.
That sounds reasonable because whenever Jagex is involving the community, it makes me happy. But at the same time, lore written from the J-Mods themselves at its finest is what makes the adventurers and the storytelling so epic.
Yeah. All right. We're also going to have Novemberfest, which is RuneScape's first annual beer festival. It's going to be like the beach, and there's going to be tons of activities, including a new beer crawl, a new seasonal minigame called the Kegger, table dancing, ride the giant carousel, and of course, this is celebrated the first bar crawl that was put into RuneScape. So, a modern take on the RuneScape bar crawl.
Funny thing you say, like the beach, because when I look at this, I think it's the spring fair all over
exactly,
again.
Exactly. And you know, there's lots of places in the U.S. in particular that have a fall gathering like this, like a fall fair. So, you know, the sense I'm getting is this is going to be a mix of Oktoberfest and a fall fair that you'd find in a small town. So. That's a sense of idea.
Yeah, probably. And it's funny how they say that it allows the World Guardian to relax after a lot of XP gains. And I'm like, this is all about XP gains.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's a funny way to play with worlds. What's your opinion about this, about continuing this strategy of releasing Spring Fire and Beach and of Tombofest?
I think the beach is good. I think the winter event is good. I think what we do need to be careful of, though, is that we need to ensure that we're not using the beach area and the crater area too much, so much so as that when the beach and the winter event come around, we're going to be feeling as that, oh, we just had this last month in terms of Novemberfest. Let's maybe try and make it more unique. So I think as long as the two headlining ones, the beach and the winter events there, can maintain their uniqueness, I think we'll be fine.
But what if I said that the Gelenorian giving could be moved to the Lumbridge Crater? Do you think that would be an improvement, or do you want it to stay as it is today?
I think that would be an improvement. And at the same time, I mean, that's what that area is for. It was designed to be a community gathering spot. So it would make a lot of sense to move it there.
Yeah, okay. And it's also a funny thing about Novemberfest, because when I also see it, I think about alcohol.
Yep.
What do you think about that?
You know, I think RuneScape is a game that's grown up a lot. You know, it's not the game of 12-year-olds anymore. I mean, it might be, but everyone who started back when they were 12 or 8 or even younger in some cases has all grown up by this point, I think. So I initially had that thing cross my mind as well, and it's not going to be outright promoting alcoholism or anything like that. And when you look at it, also, we did have a Dwarven bar crawl way back in 2005 as well. So,
oh yes,
so,
that one.
So, that's fine. So I mean, yeah, I that also did run across my head. You know, you're just on my wavelength today.
Yeah, I'm a little bit stuck on that because, well, we both have been in RuneScape for ages. So we have been growing up with this, that RuneScape started for 12-year-olds. Well, I think at least it started that way. And it's been growing up, actually. It's just that taking these steps still makes me a bit off balance that, well, I'm actually not drinking, and I'm the only student in my university, only male student, should I say, in my university who's not drinking. So whenever I see this promotion for beer or anything, I'm a
yep.
little bit surprised.
Yep, same. Totally get that. Totally get that, Tycho. Totally get that.
But that's something I can say, that no, I'm not drinking. No, it's not that I'm taking a 3-month vacation from the beer or having what we call the memory cleaning parties. Like, you just finished your latest exam and now it's time to forget everything.
Oh boy.
For the new one.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. That's definitely a health issue for a lot of people. So don't do that.
We might
be preening a bit to our various values here, but we promise we won't do that every week.
Oh dear, I can promise that to everybody listening right here, right now.
Let's move on to questions. So we got two of them this week, one from Parnassius. It's an audio question, so I'll play that for you guys right now.
Hey guys, Panassius here with two questions this week. Firstly, the quick one. We have seen Jagex move these in-game events from being dailies by removing the 1k cap, which is a great idea to help players with time constraints. However, do you think once the 10k tokens has been reached to unlock all the rewards, that they should then once again set a 1k daily limit so players cannot abuse the system and get too many reward boxes? Previously, if you did it every day, the most you could get was an extra 4,000 points for some extra rewards. Now we are hearing of players getting well over 100k tokens during the event. Do you believe this is overkill, and do Jagex need to limit this? Secondly, we heard Jagex say that the 120 Slayer failed and went down poorly. I disagree with this personally and thought it wasn't bad at all, although there were several issues that could have been addressed. Do you think that new methods should have been introduced for training? For example, they could have had the Slayer Master Ghost in the player-owned dungeons have a new set of challenges. It could have seen the introduction of something similar to Shattered Worlds or Temple Trekking, whereby you need to run a path system that has different Slayer creatures along it. You could have 5, 10, 15, and 20 floor runs, and each floor has creatures on it that you need to kill to move on. At the end of each path, an elite monster could spawn, and you need to collect a drop from it to enter the next section. At the end of the run, you hand these drops in for chunks of XP. This could have introduced higher Slayer XP per hour drops upwards of 1 million per hour and made it more entertaining, and while being a new and different training option, still have the feel of traditional Slayer training. Love to hear your thoughts on this. Again, thank you for the awesome podcast. Welcome aboard to our new co-host, and happy RuneScaping to you all.
All right, so let's start with the easy one regarding the cap of these events. Yeah, I agree. Because, I mean, if you convert them, you can see how much bonus XP and stuff you can get from them if you're just not going for them. I do think that, you know, having an uncapped limit of 10k is great because, like we saw during the Menaphos event, you're definitely going to want to do it on your own time. You don't want to be necessarily forced to log in. So that's good. And I wholly agree with the 10k cap. I don't know about you, Tycho. What do you think?
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, it's been a problem for me that you have to log in every day because I want to prioritize things right. I don't want to put RuneScape before my career. So that certainly is a problem if RuneScape or Jagex come to and says, well, you must log in daily for this. So it sounds a little bit overkill, but at the same time, I think it's a very good choice. And I have to admit that I'm actually quite happy about this because I'm not actively going towards 120 Slayer, so all of this bonus XP is going straight to my pocket and helping me to get to that 120 that I'm not going to get anytime soon, but that bonus XP will help me once I do decide to get there.
So are you for a cap after 10k or no?
That's actually a hard question. I want to... No, I'm going with
all
that.
Right. I'm going to be for a cap after 10k. And I mean, I can see your reasons as well. But I think we maintain the novelty of the event if we do keep the cap in. So that's my reasoning for it.
Okay.
120 Slayer. Jagex said it didn't go down well. Should have been different in terms of methods and whatnot. Yeah, totally agree with that. And I think the Be Your Own Slayer Master would be great. I also think that, you know, if they didn't release Reaper, the Reaper task before 120 Slayer came out, I think that might have also been an interesting thing to add to post 120. But hey, that was already put into game as just a separate thing. So,
yeah, people don't like them coming in and changing. Yeah, you know the Reaper. Well, we moved that to after 99 Slayer. So that's a bit of something. There are actually quite many things in game that would fit so much better if they moved them around a bit to better fit lore wise and skill wise. But. Yeah, it was released and it's there to see it's nailed. So yeah. That's why. But to answer Panassia's question, if it was right released, well, this is the way I see it. The first thing I think when somebody says Slayer, is the skill that improves your PVM skills. And what is it that improves your PVM skills? Well, that's challenges. So the suggestion from Parnassius sounds like a good idea. I still think though it's a little too far from the traditional Slayer, because that's something that the players wanted to protect, the identity of Slayer.
Yeah. And I mean, it would have from 1 to 99, right?
Yeah, it certainly did. So I'm thinking something in terms of after 99, how about making the boss versions of the Slayer creatures more common?
Like
remove the AFK entirely, but making it more challenging.
All right, I could see that.
Because they drop about three times as much Slayer XP and then three times the drops, and that makes it more active and increases the Slayer XP without changing the monsters.
But is that really unique? Put yourself in the shoes that if 120 Slayer just came out and you saw this was going to be one of the features of 120 Slayer, do you think that you would have been happy? Do you think that others would have been happy?
I mean, I would have been happy XP and drop wise, but when thinking about it, if that wouldn't been 120 Slayer, I would have been, what is this? This is lazy work, actually. It wouldn't have been unique.
And, you know, in some ways, I think Slayer was a really hard update to do for 120. And I think I said this on the RuneFest podcast. Slayer was hard to do to 120 because if you look at Slayer is a very simple skill. You get given a task by a Slayer Master. You go kill those creatures and you get a certain amount of XP for each one you kill. You go back, you get some Slayer points from your Slayer Master, you're done. And that's literally all there is to the Slayer skill. And it works. It's nice and simple. It's a skill that people love. Now, asking to expand that to 120, sure, we can just say, okay, we're going to level 120 now. We're going to add some new Slayer creatures along the way, and they're going to have some unique mechanics, and they're going to be pretty interesting. You can do that. But for the... I think for the essence of 120 skills that was talked about at RuneFest, in that the skill should be fundamentally different after you cross that 99 threshold, and that, yeah, okay, you're a master, you're a Slayer Master, right? So if you're a Slayer Master, why are you being still asked to kill 200 plus Dark Beasts, right?
Yeah.
And that's, I think, where the problem with 120 Slayer comes in, is that it's so simple that you're a Slayer Master at level 99 that the original method of Slayer pre 99 and extending that to past 99 doesn't really make sense just because you're a master. And because of that, I think that it was a poor decision to do that for the first 120 expansion beyond 99. So they might have gone better with something else. But with that being said, they needed space to add new monsters. And I think when 120 Slayer was being designed, that was the core reason why they said they're going to 120, is because, you know, we're going to add these new monsters and there's going to be unique mechanics of them. And for what it's worth, we did get that unique mechanic in the Sophonim Slayer dungeon with the way the drops work, right?
So, oh, yes, we did.
I think maybe if we would have had a little bit more of that on release, a little bit more of those unique mechanics, it might have been different. If it would have had the Be Your Own Slayer Master as well, I think they would have hit the nail on the head with that. So, you know, it's a learning experience going forward. And at this point, hey, everyone likes Slayer. So make the most of it and put some new creatures in, and you get something like the Grove, right?
Oh, yes.
So. Thank you, Parnassius. Our next one is from Flash. Dear host, since the rewards of Customer Support Week is an additional casket from Clue Scrolls, I thought it would be fitting to ask you guys, what is the best reward you've ever received from Treasure Trails that you can recall? On my first Elite Clue Scroll, I got a third age Range Coif. I was somewhat disappointed because it was only worth 10 mil at the time, but was still pretty happy about it, since it was definitely better than the usual stuff, and that's from Flash. All right. What's your best clue reward, Tycho?
I'm thinking about it. I actually haven't done a clue for a very, very long time. I did it during a short period when during the lottery work, but after that, I just got tired and decided, no, you know, this is too repetitive. I just want to do my exploration and uncover a lot of lore. But my best reward? I can't say I've been lucky in Treasure Trails. I mean, that would possibly be the one time I got three Treasure Trail specific items. I mean, I got one U composite bow and then two Willow composite
bows. Was that before invention?
Let's see.
Because invention set that stuff up.
It must have been just before the... Yeah, it was just before they released the alchemical onyx. So it was like, yeah. But then late, I actually saved it because I knew it would be worth a lot later. And see and behold, the alchemical onyx was released, and I actually watched their stream where they told us that it would be fortunate components. And you know what that happened when they tell something on the stream? Yep. It's panic buy.
That's
panic
right.
Panic buy and panic sell wands.
That's right.
So that's certainly... well, hit me well. And I bought composite bows from the GE for 50k each. So I could make my very own Luck of the Dwarves. Ooh. That I'm still wearing today.
That's nice.
So, but I guess it would be that drop one U composite bow and two Willow. Not because of the GE value at the time, but because I could use that to make my own Luck of the Dwarves.
All right. I have got in the past, I have got numerous Robin Hood hats. I think it's something like three or four at this point of number of Robin Hood hats I got over time. And, you know, I've also got a good number of the regular Treasure Trail items through it before Elite Clue Scrolls came out. I haven't had the fortune of getting anything great from the huge Elite Clue Scrolls that have come out recently. But when Hard Clue Scrolls were the top of the tree, and that was the best you could hope for, way back in the day, gosh, I don't know, this might have been... I don't know if this was 07 or 06.
Oh, dear.
Let me just see when this was, because I don't know if this was out at the time. Let's see. I'm not going to spoil what this was because we all know. Okay.
So, oh, don't make me suffer, Shane. Yeah.
It was. It had to have been sometime in 2007. I was doing a clue scroll. I started it one night and then finished it the next day. And, you know, it in some ways built a RuneScape superstition around RSBNB that whenever you're going to go to the dentist and you're going to have oral surgery done, you ought to do a clue scroll before, because this was the day I was having wisdom teeth extracted, all four of them. And that when that happened, I ended up getting third age plate legs, believe it or not.
Wow.
And this was when those were worth around 220 million GP.
Wow.
So this ended up providing a lot of my funding for what I was working on at the time. So that, of course, this was large farming. Cash. And, yeah, farming, of course. So Third Age Plate Legs. That is my best Clue Scroll item. And, you know, there's a bit of a story behind it. And those apparently are still going for around 500 mil right now. And that was my only time I ever got one of those. So, yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear, Shane, you almost killed me with the anticipation. What was it? What was it?
Yeah, it had to have been 2007 because I sold it before the GE was a thing.
Oh, so you just stood at Varrock East Bank and spammed selling Third Age Plate Legs?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Oh, or did the GE come out in 07?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, it was
Remember doing a very good deal in 07.
Okay.
If you got that time for a small story.
Sure.
So I was at the Jewel Arena, the new biome, in full Addy armor. And one thing, I really wanted that challenge to duel people. So I met this guy in rune armor. And see and behold, I actually beat somebody in rune armor. So, and he was like, oh, what's that plate body you're having? And I'm like, oh, this is Adamant's plate body. Nothing special. And he's like, oh, trade me. I want that. So I traded him, and see and behold, for my Adamant's plate body, he traded me two Adamant two-hand swords and one dragon scimitar.
Ooh, that might have been worth a lot back in the day.
Yeah, so I actually didn't have any knowledge about Dragon more than that was some high-level stuff. That was the extent of my knowledge back in the day. So I traded, and he accepted, and I tried to equip it, and it said you have to complete Monkey Madness before you can wield this item.
Of course.
So there I was with an item I couldn't use, and I'm like, I have no idea what this is worth. So I went to the Varrock East Bank and start spamming selling Dragon Scimitar, and one person traded me, and see and behold, he gave me 120k.
Ooh.
And that was way more money than I had ever acquired. I mean, this was the time when I was just running and picking red berries and selling them to players. method I had back in the day. So, and I was like shocked. Wow, 120k. And I still got those two Addy swords. So what I did was I took 100k and started spamming buying Granite Maul and brought my first Granite Maul for 100k. And then it was straight to the Hill Giants and test it and get some big bones and leveling up Prayer.
Nice. Yeah, see, so we all have stories like that, and mine came from a Clue Scroll, and yours came from a Lucky Market encounter. So.
Yeah, I don't know why I ripped off that Hasselmere beard. I mean, we two are oldies.
Alrighty, well, if you want to send questions in, like, or discussion topics like Flash and Parnassius did, you can email them to questions@rsbnb.com. We also take voicemails or text messages to 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632, or you can leave us a DM on Twitter @RSBNB. So we're going to jump straight into tech news right now, and Google had a boatload of announcements this week. They announced new Google Home products, including Home Mini and Home Max, as well as the new Pixel 2 and a new Pixel Book Chromebook as well. So, of course, the thing here that most people are going to be interested in, first of all, is the new Pixel 2. The Pixel 2 is a 5-inch smartphone from Google. It runs Android Oreo. And the Pixel XL 2 has smaller bezels, but is a little bit more expensive and has a 6-inch screen. And, of course, this is Google's flagship Android phone where they put their own version of Android on it. And they say this is what Android is. This is what Google sees Android is. And in much of a ways, this is a top-end smartphone of the year, just like the iPhone 8 is as well. Rumor has it already that the Pixel has dethroned the new iPhone 8 as the best smartphone camera out there. So we'll have to see what the pictures look like when they finally emerge. You ever use Android? You have any interest in a new smartphone?
Yeah, actually, ever since RuneFest, I took some pictures with it and I realized that, oh man, my phone is from the Stone Age. I have to switch this one out. Especially when I was trying to film, I noticed that the lightning of the area really messed up the focus on my phone.
Right.
So I have to switch it out soon. And when this new kind of technology comes out, it's always interesting how people are reacting to it. There was always this, what we call the tech nerds, who's always buying it and doing in-depth analysis.
Yep.
If it, how well it feels. And then there's those who come behind the reviews, that they read first, they make a smart choice, and making sure that what they are putting their money on, it's worth. And then we have the people like me, who doesn't buy any new tech until it's completely broken.
So what they also announced with the new Pixels is they announced what they're calling Google Pixel Buds, which is Google's own wireless versions of earpods that Apple has. And, you know, you might think, oh, this is just another set of earpods or earbuds out there that can connect to my device. And, oh, maybe it can do some provide some good sound quality. But the new Pixel earbuds from Google have the ability to automatically translate text that you're hearing, or speech that you're hearing, and play it back. So I got a bit of a video demo here that Google had from this. So I'll just play some of it right now. All right, we got a bit of an ad first. So we'll get to that first, right as soon as I can skip this. But it works for, you know, any number of languages out there. So let's just have a listen and see.
Hey, Isabel, how's it going?
Hey, Isabel, hur är läget?
Helt okej, tack.
Absolutely
okay,
thank you.
What do you think of these cool new headphones?
Vad tycker du om de här coola nya hörlurarna?
Mitt team designade dem, så jag tycker de är ganska coola.
My team designed them, so I think they're pretty cool.
So there you have it, live translation of speech from these headphones.
Yeah, that's very impressive. I have to say, for those not familiar with the language that was translated, that's actually Swedish.
Oh, and, I had no idea.
I'm a Swede myself, so I could tell that the translation was on point.
So there's nothing wrong with it, and it would pass for, you know, if I was walking down the street there, it would pass.
I mean, from this example, it was as on point as it can be. I mean, languages will always have this, that one word means a lot of different things in other languages. But from this sample alone, it was on point, and I'm actually very impressed. I mean, just walking down the street and somebody talking in English and it translates into Swedish. I mean, wow, that really brings up a whole new area.
Right. And I mean, some of the hardest languages in the world to learn: Russian, Chinese, Japanese, Korean. You know, you might be spending, you know, say a month in Japan or something, but you don't want to necessarily learn the entire language. You can take these and you can walk through the streets of Tokyo and you don't have to worry about if you're going to be able to speak the language if you get lost or something like that. Right. So this is very much setting a direction for Google going forward.
Yeah, I only hope that this isn't becoming the starting line of being non-international, that in a very faraway future we have everything translated to us, that we still put effort into learning other languages.
Right.
But it's, as you said, this is a very good thing to have if you're only making a temporary stay at Japan or Russia or any other place that has a language that you don't understand.
Now, they also brought out the Google Pixel Book, which is a premium Chromebook in the body of a standard laptop, it's going to sell for about $1,200 US. Remains to be seen how well that'll sell, because I have only really heard of Chromebooks being successful in the education market, and I don't know if a normal individual is ready to adapt or adopt a Chromebook if they can just adopt a tablet, right? So we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Yeah, that remains to be seen. Waiting for those reviews.
Yep. And also with this Home Mini and Home Max, just new Google Home products for speakers and whatnot. So not too much to write home about there. All right, our next piece of tech news is Microsoft-based, and Microsoft is killing off Groove Music. So you might be wondering, what is Groove Music? Well, Groove Music is Microsoft's music subscription service that was bundled with Windows 10 and the Xbox. A lot of people were really shocked about this because, Microsoft, Google, and Apple, they all have their own music streaming services. You have Google Play Music for Google, Apple Music for Apple, and Microsoft is here killing off Groove Music that existed on the Xbox, Windows Phone, and Windows 10. And basically what Microsoft is offering to people who are Groove Music subscribers is that you can get a free 60-day trial of Spotify Premium, and your Groove playlist will be transferred over to Spotify as well. But come December 31st of 2017, the Groove Music app will no longer offer the option to stream, purchase, or download music. So it's effectively just going to become a music player at that point. So I don't know. Like, I know there are lots of fans of the Groove Music app, but I also know that there are a lot of people who are out there who just use Spotify. So I don't know. Have you ever used Groove Music, or are you a Spotify user?
I mean, I'm more of a Spotify user, and I'm telling this to everybody listening. It's not because Spotify is Swedish or anything, but I really like the huge selection of music and everything that Spotify stands for, and the services. So, but it's still a bit shocking hearing about it.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're offering a 60-day trial, but, I mean, that's limited.
Yeah, and, it sets off real alarm bells for what Microsoft is doing as a platform. They're the only ones who don't have a music streaming service now. Microsoft has enough money in the bank that they could buy Spotify if they wanted to. And, I mean, you have to look back to the 1990s to see this, because in the 1990s, Microsoft was constantly vilified in the press of the day because they were tagged as a monopoly, because they integrated Internet Explorer so deeply into Windows 98 that you couldn't remove it. And it played such a pivotal role of the experience on Windows 98 and Windows ME to a degree that it caused Microsoft severe legal issues. And ever since then, they have been really careful to not step on toes and appear too monopolistic. But I think this is a point where they need to be aggressive in the industry and step themselves out there and differentiate themselves from everyone else. And Groove Music did that. And, I mean, I don't know if they have enough money to purchase Spotify. I mean, I'm sure they could make it work if they wanted to. But could you imagine what the story we'd be talking about here this week if Microsoft had bought Spotify rather than them killing off Groove Music and saying, oh, you guys just go use Groove Music, or rather go use Spotify, and here's a free 60-day trial. What they did sends shockwaves through the Microsoft ecosystem, and anyone who is intertwined with the Microsoft ecosystem, OneDrive, Windows 10, Xbox, and of course Windows Phone, and the Surface, everyone who has one of these products is going to be utterly shocked. And that's not a good message to send to the consumer base. So I really hope that this works out for Microsoft, and I hope it's not a retreat into, let's just say, familiar territory of the enterprise Windows and Xbox, because that is their successes, and if they're retreating there, then that's a little bit odd at this point. So,
yeah, that's the reason why it's so shocking, and as you said, I'm really hoping this is going to end up well.
Yeah. But hey, I mean, they do have a Surface event coming at the end of the month, so we'll just have to wait and see what they bring for that. Maybe they got a whole new media strategy that's going to be unveiled there.
Okay, stay tuned, because we are soon returning with more news as soon as that's out.
Yeah, and we even got more Microsoft news this week that's somewhat concerning. Microsoft is bringing its Edge browser to Android and iOS.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Now that's interesting.
So, I don't know. Like, I'm pretty sure that the way it works on Android is that if you want to use a different default browser other than the one that's provided, you can do that. On iOS, you can still install third-party browsers, you know, Chrome or Firefox and now Edge. But if you click a link, say, in the Mail application on iOS, your link will open up in Safari. So, using a different browser on iOS isn't exactly something that you can commit to 100%. So it'll be interesting to see if Microsoft is able to work around that and provide hooks into their various email apps and whatnot to use Edge. So this is a shocker as well, because Microsoft has their own Surface platform for, you know, tablet, and they also had the Windows 10 for the phone. But if they're moving Edge to mobile, that sets off more of those alarm bells, because, I mean, sure, Google has their own platform and they put Chrome out for iOS, but no one uses Edge on their Windows 10 PC that I'm aware of. You know, Edge had great promise when it appeared on Windows 10. I used it for a bit, but at the end of the day, I had to go back to Chrome or Firefox. So I'm struggling to see what the purpose of this is, aside from Microsoft attempting to appear platform agnostic.
I mean, the one thing that you have to make sure when launching something, it's that it's accessible to people. I mean, if I take an example that's quite close to me, they are building a train station in the middle of nowhere. And I'm asking myself, why are they doing that? And I'm asking around, and they're saying, oh, they need to have a train station for when they build their houses. I'm like, okay, well, that makes sense. Well, now we have a train station in the middle of a field with agriculture. So I think this is the same thing here, that they are being aggressive, that they are trying to get it out and make sure that it's accessible for everybody. And as you said, there are things with Chrome and Firefox that Edge can't touch at the moment. But before they fix that, I think it needs to be accessible for everybody and everything.
Yeah. So you think it's just a way of extending their reach out to the iOS and Android platforms? It's not necessarily something we need to worry about on the mobile side of Windows.
I don't actually think so. I mean, now that I have been reaching out more, they could potentially start to look into the functionality. What can Edge do that Chrome can't? I mean, that's a very tough question. But if they sit down and talk about it and come up with a couple of answers to that, then Edge can actually have a huge benefit of being released today, rather than after when they come with that.
All right, so let's hope it's not all doom and gloom then. Sounds good to me. All right, so our September Skill of the Month and October Skill of the Month updates. Our September Skill of the Month finished with Parnassius winning the Summoning Skill of the Month with 54.9 million XP gained. Second place was Gem Andy 52 with 20.3 million, and third place was Flash with 12.5 rather. Fast forwarding to the October Attack Skill of the Month. Yeah, people are real thrilled with this. Parnassius has gained 904,000, Gem Andy 52 has gained 34,000, and X-Blades has gained just over 2,000 XP. So, not much to write home about in this Attack Skill of the Month. Kind of flat. But we do also have Inventor September, the Informer Roundup, written by our own King Kulla, covering the various articles we had in RuneScape for RSBNB Informer this September. We had, of course, It's RuneScape Tradition for tennis, talking about Double XP Weekend, Alex's Analysis Automations, all the raging for Invention. Colton was back with NPC Profiles this month covering the Gnome Child. And I talked about 10 years of iPhone and the release of the iPhone 10. I would recommend everyone have a read at the Gnome Child article. It is absolutely hilarious because you see Gnome Child in game, but Gnome Child you have in game is not the Gnome Child you have online, and what everyone else knows is Gnome Child. Mm-hmm. So definitely would recommend giving that a read. Informer.rsbnb.com.
Oh, the memes.
Yes. That's what Gnome Child is all about.
You don't say.
So we're going to run through some achievements. What do you got for our first batch?
So we got Jade Gizmo, who got 99 construction at the 3rd of October 2017. Well, this year, congratulations to Jade Gizmo. And then we have Daydreamer, 99 fishing on the 3rd of October. Congratulations to you too. Gorilla Dude 540 with 99 magic on the 1st of October. Oh, magical congratulations. And then we have Tasty Roma with 120 invention also on the 1st of October 2017. Congratulations to you, Tasty Romeo.
Good job, everyone. And continuing on, we got Parnassius with 120 summoning on the 30th. Bonsai 99 with 99 fletching on the 30th as well. Mats 374 with 99 Herblore on the 30th. And Vantic with 99 crafting on September 30th as well. So congratulations to everyone. Those are some great achievements. Nice seeing double 120s in there, both in summoning and in invention. So good job all around. Okay, so it's Pick of the Week time. You're going to tell us a little bit of a story about Pick of the Week.
Yes, for now we're closing in on 2 hours, and for those listening might have noticed that I like adding stories to whenever I'm telling something. And this is also a story. So basically, this is a story of where is the population of the Earth going. So this started when I was in high school. And talking with my chemistry teacher, and this was of course during the lesson, and my chemistry, and I asked the question, well, where do you think the population of the Earth is going? Because, well, let's be honest, Hollywood has been making a lot of movies about the population of the Earth facing multiple crises. I mean, it's been everything from going to Mars, it's been zombie apocalypse, it's been natural disasters, volcanoes, hurricanes, you name it. And everything that we are going towards a hard time. And then we have, of course, the warm-up. So I went to the whiteboard and talked about this to the whole class. Like, where is the population of the Earth going? And he gave 2 examples. It could either be towards the reindeer scenario or the bacteria scenario.
Now, so what are each of these 2 scenarios, I would ask?
Yeah, exactly. That's also what I asked myself at the time. So he told us that... I think it was during 2004, or maybe many years ago, they placed quite an amount of reindeers on a small island outside of Iceland. I think it was around 30 or 40 reindeers. And they were going to live there in peace and harmony. And every year they would make a quick count of how many reindeers there would be. So the first year, no surprise, the reindeers increased in population, and so did it in the following years, from 30 to 56 to 124 and so on. But as it became more crowded, the resources on the island couldn't cover for everybody, and then a really harsh winter hit them, and that limited the amount of resources. I mean, the plants that the reindeer had to eat dwindled down to almost nothing. And from being a population over 150, guess how many were left?
Zero.
Well, almost. Seven reindeers were left alive after that. So a natural disaster hit, and there were seven left. And then the next year, guess how many were left?
They disappeared even further.
Yeah, now it became zero. So after the natural disaster hit, there were none left. So now the question is humanity going towards that we are increasing in population, and once it hits a certain limit, that a disaster will occur until there are none left, that not even the ones surviving can live with what they have left? Because let's be honest, seven reindeers, there was still hope for that small population, but the amount of resources that was left, even though it was only seven, it wasn't enough. So there were zero left. So that's the first thing, the reindeer population. And then the bacteria population. Now, have you ever seen bacteria in petri dishes?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah. So as time goes on, these bacteria grows exponentially. They split, one becomes two, two becomes four, and so on. And this happens until there's no space left. And what happens then? Well, if you count them, then you will notice that the growth will actually slow down. They won't extend to more than what the resources can handle, but they are slowly reaching a maximum amount, and then keeping that amount as long as they can. So it's not a case of them dying out. They are living in harmony with the amount of resources that's available and not overextending it, because they know, well, it's a bad thing if we become more than the resources can handle. And then there came the question of what are we going towards, to the reindeer population or the bacteria population? And as it looks now, I can tell the listeners that, well, according to my chemistry teacher, it's going towards the bacteria population. And an example of that is, like, 500 years ago, it was quite normal for a family having at least five kids in the family.
Yeah.
But if you look today, how many kids are actually in a family?
Yeah, the average rate, I think, in Europe, birth rate is like 1.1.
Yeah, I heard 1.2, so around that, 1.1, 1.2.
And plus, also, we have all the advancements in technology as well that'll allow us to keep on the bacteria route.
Oh, yes.
Technology-wise, food, energy, health, all those things together are going to prevent us from going the way of the reindeer. So,
yeah, so we are actually – so the birth rate is a lot lower than 500 years ago. But
yeah.
We are not going to overextend as it looks like now. But yeah, only time will tell, I guess. But I guess hopefully this will comfort some people who are sitting in their homes and hoping that we won't become more than the resources of the Earth can handle, and we have to migrate to Mars.
Yep. Well, thank you, Tycho, for that. That definitely helps a lot. I'm very pleased with that. So, all right. So as we wrap this up, what have you been up to on RS?
So as I mentioned, I lost my comp cape. Well, a while ago, ever since the amnesty period ended. Oh, I love the amnesty period of keeping the comp cape without rushing to 120. Anyways, I'm 110 at the moment, but I feel like, Master Quest cape is the one and only that I love, that needs to be at my back at all times. So what am I doing? The answer is I'm actually trying to get closer to the community, and not by posting on the forums or anything, but actually bank standing with my Clan Quest Vex and talking to people, helping noobs, and maybe giving some free stuff. I actually, somebody got 1 mil from me today by me giving an enchanted key to them, and then they went out with a spade and they found it. I think the one who found it was called Win2Tank.
Oh, that's an interesting
name. I think it was. So shout out to him if I'm right. So that's basically what I'm been focusing on talking with the community, talking with the clan, and helping people customize their action bars, because there's actually a surprisingly amount of people who don't have an efficient action bar that struggles with PVM and thinks that EOC is the baddest thing in the world.
Yeah, we got a lot of work to do on that still.
Yeah, so that's actually something that I would like Jagex to do, that if you go to the Lumberj Carbant Academy, you can get an action bar from it to your style. But the bad thing about that is it's ordering it about from level to level.
It's
the lowest level ability to the highest one. And that's the total opposite of what you really want. If you go to the RuneScape Wiki, it's got some really nice examples there that you really can use for Slayer or anything, and with Revolution. So if something, I would actually like Jagex to take that one example and add it to the example boss they are giving out at the Lumberj Combat Academy.
All right. We'll get a link to that in the show notes, because I think a lot of our listeners could also benefit from that. So that's good.
No, actually, why not? Just add me, Tycho, Elf, and ask me for a custom action ball. Why not?
Right on. All right. As for me this week, I have been focused on my customer support clue scrolls. Probably got around 1.5 mil in total from doing that. In addition to that, I have just been fishing. I have been arc fishing, and it pains me to say it, but I have been topping off my rods after I finish at my island with the waterfall, because I'm going for that invention leveling. So, yeah.
Well, you're not alone in this world, Shane. You're not alone.
Yeah, I might change to ranged, augment a crossbow and augment some armor and just go kill something ranged-based and see how that goes. So we'll see. But that's about it for this week. And that's it also for this week's episode of RSBnB Update. So thank you, Tycho, for doing this. Hopefully we'll have some good fun together as we go on. If today was any indication, we will definitely be on that path. I don't think there's anything else before we go.
No, I'm only hoping that nobody noticed that I got a little bit of the flu, called the Rune Flu from RuneFest. I know it's been 1.5 weeks, but I hope nobody noticed.
Nah, you're doing great. Well then, if you guys want more, full show notes are at update.rsbnb.com. We're also on Twitter at rsbnb, where you can chat with us and find us in the interweek of all the Informer articles and whatnot that we put out. And if you also want to chat with us in-game, we're in Friends Chat Bits Bytes. And until next week, have a good week, and thank you for sharing your time with us.